Good morning again. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Monmouth County. My name is Jane Reskoff, and I serve as program chair. Whoever you are, whomever you love, however you arrived at this beloved place, you're welcome here. Our mission is to create community, transform ourselves, and transform the world. If you are new here today, please fill out a visitor card available in the lobby to learn more about us. After the service, light refreshments will be served in the community room to your right. Please join us. For those of you who need a quiet place but want to hear the service, you're welcome to go to the East Room, out the rear door, and to your right. Our Share the Plate recipient for March is Covenant House in Asbury Park. The staff there works with homeless and runaway youth ages 18 to 21 to provide health care, help with substance abuse, counseling, educational services, job training, and transition living as needed. One cause of youth homelessness is the foster care system. More than 25% of former foster care children became homeless within 2 to 4 years of leaving the system. They are very appreciative of all donations. In addition, we have this special announcement today. UUCMC's Earth Room Concerts Folk Music Series presents Canadian husband and wife folk rock duo, The Young Novelists, with Pittsburgh-based openers Brad Yoder and Jason Rafalak on Saturday, April 8th at 7:30. More information and discounted price advance tickets for this show are available at the coffee hour. Before our service begins, please turn to those sitting near you and say good morning. Thank you for turning off your cell phone as we now enter into the time of reflection and celebration. Welcome again to this place of love and hope.
Would the music committee please join me? Oh, and Anne Shramko as well. She was on the music committee, so. We, the music committee, would like to honor Anne Shramko this morning. Anne, after, I think, 15 years on the music committee, four of which she co-chaired with, don't look at this, with Bob Lightburn, she has decided to step down. While we certainly understand and appreciate it, that may be a time to step back and simply enjoy the fruits of her work, we also want her to know that we deeply appreciate her long and tireless years of service, to help create an outstanding music program at UUCMC. And this is a very small token of our deep appreciation. We, the music committee, the singers, and the entire congregation, thank you, Anne.
Good morning to you all and welcome. Our opening words are a litany of witness by Philip Lund, and there's a part for you. So I'm going to ask you to say when I prompt you, I am with you in this. Why don't you try it now? I am with you in this. Good sound. Refugee family seeking a safe place for their children's dreams, say,
I am with you
in this.
For
a world that accepts them for who they are, say, I am with you
in this.
Hang on a minute. I am on. You can hear me? Okay. To the black parents wondering when will the lives of their children truly matter, we say, I am with you in this. To the lonely, the frightened, the dispossessed, we say, I am with you in this. To the bullied, the battered, the broken down, say, I am with you in this. To the hungry and the homeless, to the silenced and the shamed, to the weary and the worried, we say, I am with you in this. To all those for whom your disheveled heart is aching, we say, I am with you in this. I'd like to invite up the Lamb family to light our chalice this morning. Amy, Mark, Silvestra, and Luca are new to our congregation, and Amy and Mark are new members. Welcome. May the love that will not let us go shine forth in this moment, in this hour, and in the days to come. Thank you so much.
I'd like to invite the kids up for our story this morning. We're going to sit on the steps today. So our story this morning is a story about a third grade classroom. Mr. Cohen was the teacher of the most quarrelsome third grade class you could ever imagine. The kids in this class, they argued about everything. They argued about who would stand in the front of the lunch line. Has that happened to any of you before? No? That's pretty lucky. My son talked about that all the time when he was in third grade. And they argued about who would be the best reader in the class, and if Mr. Cohen asked them whether it was sunny or rainy outside, they even argued about that. Well, Mr. Cohen, he was at his wit's end, and there was so much arguing going on that no one was actually learning anything. When they tried to do multiplication problems, Janie and Stan argued about whether 2 times 2 was the same as 2 plus 2. And when it was time for spelling, Carmen and Ling began to quabble about who should get their turn first in the spelling bee. Yes. Ooh, yeah. Kicked out of school, and the arguing's bad, and you end up in the principal's office. There's some foreshadowing here in the story. In music class, Carlos and Beth each tried to grab the tambourine, and Carlos ended up in the nurse's office when the tambourine hit him in the head. Mr. Cohen, he had tried everything. And he promised the class an ice cream party if they could get through one day without an argument. Well, Charles and Bobby, they began to argue about whether they should get chocolate chip ice cream or cookie dough. And Mr. Cohen, he even threatened the kids, and he told them that he would send every single one of them who argued to the principal's office.
Knew it.
Well, do you think that worked? It did not work because the principal, Mr. Sanchez, he pulled Mr. Cohen aside politely at the end of lunch, and he said, you know, 15 students in my office is just too much, and I had hoped to be able to get a little bit of work done this afternoon. So Mr. Cohen, just like you said, he called the parents, and he tried politely to talk to them and ask if they would have their kids stop. He kept the kids in from recess. Nothing worked. So there was only one thing left to do. Mr. Cohen, he went to his synagogue on the Sabbath, and he prayed. And as he was praying, his rabbi noticed the look of despair on his face, and he came and he sat next to him, and he asked him what was going on. And so Mr. Cohen told him the tale of the most difficult, argumentative class in third grade history. And when he had heard it all, he said simply, "Stay home from work on Monday and leave it to me." So that Monday, the kids, they walked into the classroom and they found this rabbi sitting at Mr. Cohen's desk. And of course, they immediately began to argue. Was Mr. Cohen sick? Or had Mrs. Sanchez finally got so tired of the steady stream of arguing and the children showing up in her office that maybe she fired him? Well, the rabbi sat and listened. She didn't yell. She didn't interrupt. She didn't plead or she didn't scold. She sat simply, quietly at Mr. Cohen's desk. And after a while, the kids began to wonder what was going on. And the argument started to gradually die down as the kids watched the rabbi sit at the desk and they wondered what was next. Well, when the classroom was finally quiet, the rabbi stood up slowly. "Mr. Cohen will not be here today, and I am your substitute teacher. And I have but only one thing to teach you. And you have to listen carefully because I will not repeat it." And the kids were so surprised that they didn't argue. And the rabbi's voice rang out in stunned silence. "Last night in my dreams, God told me that the Messiah is among you." What do you think happened next? No, they didn't get in trouble. They all started arguing again. Pandemonium broke out in the classrooms, and the kids started arguing about who might be the Messiah. It couldn't be Charles because he always got into mischief. But on the other hand, Charles could always be counted on to share lunch with a friend. And Ling, she was clearly too bossy to be the Messiah. But then again, Ling went to church every single Sunday and prayed every night before bed. Ooh, what about Janie? She always did her work carefully and neatly. Now, the arguing didn't start overnight, and when Mr. Cohen returned to school on Tuesday morning, the first thing he heard was Stan's angry voice. "I'm telling you, Carmen, Bobby is the Messiah." Just the other day, I saw him comforting a little first grader who had scraped her knee. And isn't that the sort of thing that a Messiah would do?
Yeah.
All right. So soon, however, the arguments, they began to disappear. And when Janie began to argue with Charles that she should be the leader in line, she offered to stand behind him in line. Because after all, Charles might be the Messiah. And in music class, Carlos and Beth took turns using the tambourine because, after all, one of them might be the Messiah. And after that year, yes. They stopped fighting for goodness sakes. Sheesh. Such wisdom. All year, the kids kept trying to figure out who might be the Messiah, and they began to think about each other differently. They noticed good things about each other. Stan was a great artist. He had a huge imagination. Ling, she was passionate and she was strong. Carmen was the most loyal friend that you could ask for. And as for Mr. Cohen, He was a gentle and kind teacher. Maybe he was the Messiah. And so the kids began to also think about themselves differently. Each child wondered, could I be the Messiah? The children were inspired to try and to be the very best people that they could be. Now soon, the reputation in Mr. Cohen's class changed for one of treating one another well. Teachers came from far and wide because they wanted tips from Mr. Cohen on how to have such a wonderful class. The kids ended the year in Mr. Cohen's class. They graduated having learned a very important lesson and that they would never forget. And this is a lesson that I hope that you could learn from this story. That everyone around you is special, and anyone could be the Messiah. You're four? Even at four. Even at four, you are special, and everyone around you is special. Next fall, Mr. Cohen looked at his brand new class of third graders. And already John and Anna were arguing about whether or not alligators were the same as crocodiles. Good morning, children, he began. Has anyone ever heard of the Messiah? He lowered his voice to a whisper, so everyone had to be quiet and listen. And he said, I have been told that there is a Messiah in this class. And so our story ends. And go now in peace. Everybody is special. Go now in peace to your classrooms.
And we'll now take this morning's offering to share with Covenant House, an important organization that helps each child have a chance in some very, very difficult circumstances. Let us be generous as much as possible. And as always, we are grateful for your gifts.
Good morning. My name is M. Benish. You know, I had a really fun time writing this little thing. At one point, it was kind of a communist rallying cry. Another version, I had you all chanting, bagel, bagel, along with me. It was very late last night. As I mentioned to the people I was sitting with last night at the Mystery Friends potluck, it was not finished at that point. It really took me a long time to figure out exactly what I wanted to say this morning. But first, an introduction. Many, if not most of you, know me. I've been coming to this congregation since I was 3 years old. Which is always longer ago than I think. I don't come every weekend, sometimes not for months, but really, whenever I can. And I don't just attend. I'm fairly active here when I get a chance. I've been on both ends of Mystery Friendship, helped build the Gaga Court out back, and organized the Coming of Age service with my class 4 years ago. I watch your children in the nursery while you're in service, and have attended several rallies and marches with our social action groups. UUCMC is a community that has been with me since before I can remember. I know I can ask for and receive help from anywhere here should I need it, and really appreciate that. And so, I make a financial pledge. I pledge because I can, because I have a little extra money that I can afford to spend to improve my community, which is admittedly easier because I'm a kid, and my mom takes care of utilities and food and stuff. With the money she makes here, there's a reason I'm one of the few youths who donates. I'm encouraged to, you know, but I signed that book. I'm a member. I eat bagels in community hour every week. This is the part where I had you guys chanting bagel. I come listen. I come listen to the guest musicians and speakers. It's like I always say, from each according to their ability and to each according to their need. I have the ability to give money and the need for community, much like many of you, so I pledge. Thank you.
are wading into perhaps deep and troubled waters this morning with our fourth source of Unitarian Universalist wisdom. This is the one that says that Jewish and Christian teachings would call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. I hope we're up to the challenge today. I'm aware that some of us have moved beyond Christianity and Judaism for all too painful reasons. But I'm also aware that our past stays with us, and we must be conscious about what we want to keep and what we want to leave behind. I'm aware that we do not agree on the meaning and purpose of God, nor do we agree on how to live love's commandment. I hope, though, that all of us are here in order to hear one another's truths, not to criticize them. I hope the person sitting next to you right now knows that they are respected and loved for who they are right now in this community. We are here to understand one another, not to impose our beliefs upon one another. If we all lose if that is our game. So let's look at the history as written in the collection of books known as the Bible. The relevant passage appears in the book of Leviticus, which is the third book of the Hebrew Bible and the third of five books of the Torah. And it goes like this. When strangers sojourn with you in your land, you shall do them no wrong. The strangers who sojourn with you shall be to you as natives among you, and you love them as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Following the exile and enslavement of the Israelites in Egypt, they learned an important lesson about hospitality, the very hardest way. To treat a stranger poorly defied a code of hospitality that also includes widows, orphans, and the poor. Repeatedly, we are told that because the Israelites were persecuted as the hated and dreaded foreign elements in Egyptian society, one of their primary responsibilities as a free people is to not do the same to others. They are morally bound to not oppress the stranger. This rule seeks to break that cycle of repetition and compulsion that leads to the abused becoming an abuser. The Hebrew Bible contains 36 such instructions to care for the stranger. Boundaries are necessary, security is essential, but justice cannot be trampled upon. To take this hospitality a step further, and when you reap the harvest of the land, you shall not reap all the way to the edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger, says Leviticus. Rabbi Sheila Peltz-Weinberg asks the critical questions that naturally follow. While we don't live in a world where gleaning is the answer to inequality, we might ask ourselves what measures we should take in our day that are in keeping with the concern for justice and compassion in these sacred texts. How might we apply this high standard of care and concern for the poor and the stranger today? It was from within this Jewish culture and faith that Jesus gave his greatest commandment as well. It's told like this in the book of Mark. One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked him, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this. Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment that is greater than these." This commandment to love God is turned around in our source statement, though, to focus on God's love of us and all creation. But either way, the relationship is powerful and deep. Like a parent loves their child and a child loves and depends upon their parent, A relationship with God is nurturing, protecting, and demanding of better behavior. It is from this experience of such powerful love that we learn to love ourselves and learn to love our neighbors. To reach that high bar of loving both the same is, I think, almost always a work in progress for us. For Unitarian Universalists, the source of the good and the holy in this life lends meaning and a quality of urgency to our days. The meaning is in the restful knowledge that we too are loved. The urgency comes in our need for justice for all God's children, because they too rest in this love. No goal of equality can ever be reached if we do not start right here, acknowledging love of self and love of other. All deserve the human dignity we defend for ourselves. At best, we see the world as a whole more often than as divided by us and them. This love of God's that applies universally without qualification to every being, place, and thing makes that vision possible. One statement that lives prominently on our front door always speaks to me, especially in times of confusion and despair. It's Julian of Norwich, a Christian mystic, who wrote those words, "All shall be well, all shall be well, all manner of things shall be well, for through all life moves a love that will not let us go." These are words to repeat when you cannot sleep for worrying about the world, about your life in the middle of the night. That love that moves through everything and knits everything into a web of meaningful relationship, that's the closest I can come to understanding what God is and is not. I wanted to share some of the ideas of my colleagues about this love who have their own particular experience of it. Reverend Elizabeth Ellis describes her Ignatian spirituality practice like this. We deepen our experience of God through spiritual direction and prayer. We come to know that which is beyond our explanations, but which is always love. From the knowing and from the mutuality of the experience of love, we are called to be co-creators of the reign of God on earth. God is in the nitty-gritty work of loving one another in the social, economic, political, and material world. We're called to understand the world's systems and its evils and to establish mutual love in spite of all our unlovability. At the same time, though, attention to prayer, we discover God, who beckons us to know mystery in life. We discover a love without beginning or end in which we live, which lives in us, and which offers us unimaginable joy beyond our expectations. And Reverend Eric Wickstrom describes his changing understanding of God through childhood and beyond like this. When I was young, I believed in a personal God, a person who, though invisible, would probably look like one of Michelangelo's paintings. As I grew older, I came to believe in an impersonal God, a force like gravity or love or life itself. This later belief satisfied my mind for some time, yet what was missing from this understanding of God for me was the quality of relationship, the actual experience of a relationship with God, which I had known as a child, and which in my honest moments I knew still, even though no longer they made sense. After much wrestling, I now believe in a personal God who is not a person, who is a mystery beyond my ability to comprehend, yet no less real for my confusion. This God is wholly other, yet also as close as my own breath. St. Augustine wrote, "If you can understand it, it's not God." I cannot say what God is, but I know in my soul that God is. God is known by many names, yet is not fully known by any name. Even so, God can be known and loved, and God loves us all. These are just a few descriptions of the indescribable mystery that is God's love. This is our inheritance, from our Jewish and Christian roots, one that I find myself glad to be reminded of as I walk in the doors of this meeting house every day. So whether you think of yourself as being loved by or loving some greater good, some universal impulse to co-creativity, a force of nature, or by Jesus, a great teacher of this love, we come from this compelling religious impulse to love and be loved. Yet we can look around and see that this great commandment to love our neighbors as ourselves is far, far from a done deal. This commandment translates best for me to an ethic of hospitality. Hospitality that is practical and spiritual in its ability to transform both the giver and the receiver. If you are inclined to see God in the stranger who enters your space, certain behavior is more likely to follow. If every person is here to teach us something, we are more likely to give them the space that they need. Henry Nouwen says that hospitality means primarily the creation of free space where the stranger can enter and become a friend instead of an enemy. Hospitality is not to change people, but to offer them space where change can take place. It's not to bring people over to our side, but to offer freedom, not disturbed by dividing lines. A congregation is just such a place for transformation. For enough freedom to grow and to love neighbors and strangers who could one day become friends. The idea of sanctuary is an ancient one and a current need to protect and defend the stranger in our midst. It is indeed about hospitality. With the heightened risk of deportation, immigrants in our community are feeling the pressure. The fear of being split from their families and detained indefinitely. Children born in the United States are afraid to go to school for fear that when they return, their parents will be gone. While we depend upon migrant labor with a wink, our current administration has turned up the heat. It is labeling all immigrants and refugees as dangerous and illegal, no matter what their circumstances. I know we are hurting ourselves and our own safety when we expel those who are fleeing injustice and hurting even more. The president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, Peter Morales, has recently urged our congregations to recommit to joining the sanctuary movement. That's a growing movement of faith and immigrant communities doing what Congress and the administration seem to be refusing to do, that is, protect and stand with immigrants facing deportation. Members pledge to protect immigrant families who face workplace discrimination or unjust deportation. And Unitarian Universalists are joining the many religious leaders and congregations and faith-based organizations of all denominations which are part of this movement. Those of you who were here last Sunday know we unanimously affirmed a congregation declaration of conscience that states, we will oppose any and all unjust government actions to deport, register, discriminate, or despoil. We declare our commitment to translate our values into action as we stand on the side of love with the most vulnerable among us. This pledge to provide sanctuary is a possible next step on that road to action. It reads like this. As people of faith and people of conscience, we pledge to resist the newly elected administration's policy proposals to target and deport millions of undocumented immigrants and discriminate against marginalized communities. We will open up our congregations and communities as sanctuary spaces for those targeted by hate, and work alongside our friends, families, and neighbors to ensure the dignity and human rights of all people. In doing this, we are calling upon the ancient traditions of our faiths, which recognize houses of worship as a refuge for the runaway slave, the conscientious objector, the Central American refugee fleeing the civil wars of the 80s. Sanctuary is once again growing among communities of faith that are standing in solidarity with immigrants and marginalized communities facing immoral and unjust policies. To be a sanctuary, then, means to create safe space. This can mean housing a refugee or immigrant for an extended period of time. It can also mean providing legal counsel or participating in a network of support for individuals or families living elsewhere. We can commit to being in partnership with Casa Freehold or with other congregations seeking to create sanctuary in Monmouth County. We can support local towns and hospitals, community centers, colleges, and schools as they become sanctuaries. I know that this congregation has the heart to create such safe space for others. I also know that our commitment to a daycare center prevents us from housing people here Monday through Friday. This should not stop us from considering carefully our responsibility to create sanctuary in the wider community in whatever way is possible. As people of faith and people of conscience, we will take civil initiative out of our moral obligation to embody principles of human rights and dignity. If you go to the Sanctuary Movement webpage at uua.org, you can sign the pledge as an individual. We can also begin the process of deciding as a congregation to join the movement. I know that some of you are eager to do that, or at least to explore the question. To help us get organized to begin the conversation, I put a clipboard with sign-up sheets on the table in the lobby today. And I encourage you to sign up if you want to explore this idea further. The thing is, we are ready to accompany those who are facing discrimination and possibly deportation. We are ready because we know that the face of God is there in their perilous journey. For us to accompany the stranger as they become neighbor and friend is rooted in our history and in our present reality. This higher ethical imperative to provide hospitality may mean we must defy the law and ICE enforcement. I know we should not take this risk without thinking it through together, and I invite you to let the conversation start right now. Next week, we'll devote our entire offering to the work of Casa Freehold as they support immigrants in our area on their journey here. We can begin our journey of accompanying them by being as generous as we are able in this time of great fear and need. This love of self and others is not easy work. The path before us is not yet clear. One step that can make a difference you can take the next time you see someone different, whether enemy or stranger or neighbor. Imagine for a moment, before you are tempted to turn away, that theirs is the face of God. Imagine that they hold within them that amazing spark of the divine. Imagine that they too are a child of God and worthy of dignity and love. Then observe in yourself how this thought changes what you do or feel next. What difference does it make to you to see God, even if it's only in your imagination? What difference does it make to be the eyes and hands and hearts of a love that will not let us go? I invite you now into a time of prayer and meditation. Into our circle of care, we bring our joys and sorrows each week. Our hearts this week go out to the Rastatter family, Stephen, Allison, Christina, and Liliana, as they mourn the loss of their son and brother, Evan. Evan died tragically at the all-too-young age of 22 this week. Please surround this dear family with our love. A memorial service will be held here on April 8th at 1 p.m. And may all who know both joy and sorrow in our midst find the care they need in this beloved community. We bow our heads in order to imagine not one path, but many. We imagine a path forward for those who cannot imagine any path forward because of poor health or hardship, family crisis, and other roadblocks we cannot begin to imagine or understand. We struggle to imagine a path forward for those who are forced to leave a homeland against their will, and for those unable to leave a war-torn homeland despite their lives being in danger. We imagine a path forward for those who leave their homes to make a better life for their families elsewhere. May we be a welcoming presence along that path toward hope. We come together to imagine a path forward for those of us despairing because we do not seem to know our country nor our neighbors, despite the fact that we have not moved at all. May we be the good we are hoping to find as we travel side by side down the path toward hope. We imagine a path forward for those who feel lonely this time of year. May we take one another's hands as we walk that path toward community. We know, as we imagine these ways forward and take one another's hands, the paths will lead to hope. The roads will lead to beloved community. And the arc will bend towards justice because we have dared to travel with our love in our hearts. Let's join now together in a time of silence. To the lonely, the frightened, the dispossessed, let's say, I am with you in this. I am with you in this. To the bullied, the battered, the broken down, we say, I am with you in this. To the hungry and the homeless, to the silenced and the shamed, to the weary and the worried, we say, I am with you in this. To all those for whom your disheveled heart is aching, let us say, I am with you in this. May it be so. Amen.